Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
I wish all of you could be right here at this moment. Unbelievable atmosphere.
100 years of radio broadcast for the Chicago Cubs. How cool is that?
It's remarkable.
Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air.
The Chicago Cubs are on the air.
From Wrigley Field in Chicago.
I'm Vince Lloyd, and along with Lou Boudreau, we welcome you to our broadcast.
Here at Wrigley Field with Ron Santo.
Jack Brickhouse back with you once again.
With former Cub and All-Star Ron Coomer. It's Pat Hughes reporting.
Welcome once again to Major League Baseball.
Len Casper.
Hey, Mark. Nice to see you and hear your voice as always. Ron Coomer, Pat Hughes, Dave Miska. Great to be with all you guys.
Paul Zerang, the maestro engineer.
Get out the tape measure. Long gone. Kyle Schwarber just hit one onto Sheffield Avenue.
Hey, hey! It's all over. Willie Smith just homered. The Cubs win the game.
Cubs win. Listen to this place.
Way back. Might be out of here.
Hey, hey, hey.
He did it again. He did it again.
Oh.
The game is tied. The game is tied. Holy cow.
We may be down to a pitch for a division title.
We go to the ninth inning. Time to fasten those seatbelts.
The wind and the 1-2 pitch on the way.
There it is.
Oh,
there it
is. The game is over. The Cubs have won it.
Look at a Mob Sutcliffe, a two-hitter.
It feels like it's a World Series game.
Yeah, it does. And if this kid keeps pitching like this, we may be in a World Series.
1-2. Here's the windup and the pitch.
Get it! Oh, miss strike three. 20 strikeouts for Kerry Wood.
And as I said a few minutes ago, Lou, the biggest game of his life.
No doubt about it, Milo, and I'm oh so happy. You did a great job all year. We'll continue so. And to be part of this victory, it's really an honor.
Fly the W! The Cubs win! El Mago, the magic man! Magnifico tonight!
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo.
It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series! The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
The wait is over, right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
Well, it's a long time coming, but it sounds wonderful.
I remember when there were rumors about the Score getting the Cubs, because they had made the move from GN over to BBM, and that made sense. Like, not that we ever really needed to be legitimized, because look, we had the White Sox and we had the Blackhawks, but the idea of the Cubs being on the Score was outrageous. And now here we are, what, 10 years into the deal, or into the second deal now, with the Cubs being on the Score. It's amazing.
It really is. It's crazy when you think about it in the context of what is now a full century of the Cubs being on the radio. That was an amazing piece by Chris Tannehill. Completist, and I got chills a whole bunch of times, all the different broadcasters and all the different history. And it's such a powerful, powerful medium for so many reasons. Like, some of the things that were flashing in my mind, one is when the Cubs won it in 16, this happened at cemeteries all over Chicagoland. People bringing chairs into the cemetery.
And transistor radios.
Or their phones, if they could get it that way, however they could get it, and listening to Cubs radio on the Score as they won the World Series or had games along the way while sitting in the cemetery, maybe having a beer or three with their departed loved ones. I mean, what's more powerful than that?
Mitch dispatched me during 2016. He sent me out to go cover the Cubs. Not on the field, but everything else. He's like, do you want to do some stuff for pregame? And I was like, yeah, let's put some stories together. And so I was out at Wrigley Field a lot, but I wasn't, I had covered like the LCS with the World Series stuff when they were in Cleveland. I covered Wrigleyville. And I was able to go out there, and that's when the brick facade was up and they had put chalk out there.
Oh my God, it's one of the most amazing things, spontaneous sports things that just happened.
Speaks, it was so wild, like seeing people wanting to not use it like kind of as graffiti and like big up themselves. Everyone's writing these messages to their dead family members. Oof. Because they felt so strongly that this was the year that the Cubs were going to do it. I met a man that quit his job because they wouldn't give him the day off. I think he was working for Hershey, and they wouldn't give him the day off, and he drove from Hershey, Pennsylvania, just to be, he had no ticket.
Just to be nearby.
He just wanted to be there while all of this stuff was going on. You know how I feel about this particular medium. I love it. There's an intimacy to this that can really only be done by folks who are really great at it. When it comes to play-by-play, that person is with you. They are sharing with this. Why I always talk about take Pat and Ron for a walk. Like that, there's, it's part of what I do in the summer is I make sure that I spend a few innings a week just taking a walk in Hyde Park, listening to those guys on the call. It's easier for our job to watch it on TV, but knowing how that relationship has evolved since the passing of Ron Santo and Pat still being Pat and adding in Zach and adding in you sometimes when you're in there as part of that broadcast team, it's a lot of fun. And in as we all get more and more kind of disconnected, it's nice to have those moments when you're connected.
Oh, without a doubt. No, that's good, man. It's well said, and it's lovely to have that companion. The thing about baseball on the radio, and I was just talking about this on taping something for the PBP podcast today. It's the when you're doing the game on the radio, there's more room to tell stories and just kind of relax and hang out because there's not the production elements and commercials and certain things that you got to make sure that you set up on TV. And the other big factor that lets it be looser and more fun on the radio is that nothing exists until you say it exists. You are kind of in charge. Pat Hughes is in charge.
He's the master of ceremonies of the baseball game.
And of space and time.
Yes.
From a physics perspective. And I've had to have these conversations with Ron Coomer when I've gotten a chance to do games or innings. I don't have to say, I don't have to talk about the pitch right when it comes every single time and set up every single pitch. Like, here's the pitch and here it comes. And this is what happened. We can continue the conversation. And Coomer does it. Coomer will teach you how to do it because he'll be telling the story like, and that there's a curveball outside for ball two. And he just keeps going. And you may not even realize it's happening. But great radio broadcasters can weave the game in a way that baseball broadcasters cannot.
There's also something, there's something to it. And look, we're older, right? We're in the older part of the listening demo of a score listener. And we're both Gen X guys. So this is something that when we were younger, in some cases, this is all we had. In some cases, this is how we were introduced to the broadcast of baseball.
Absolutely.
And there is something special and romantic about it. I would just say that one of the things I love about listening to play-by-play, and specifically the crew that's doing it now here on The Score, is you get to close your eyes. Now, I know I just said I usually take them for a walk, and I'm not walking with my eyes closed, but you get to live in that space of your mind. If you know the dimensions of the park that they're playing in, but to be able to close your eyes and know that you're going to get a descriptor from a guy like Pat Hughes is incredible for those that are visually impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their connection to the ballpark. And I've heard from plenty of people in that situation. And the way that they feel like, even though they might not be able to see as well or see at all, that they can see it because Pat Hughes is so good at describing it. And Coombe is so good at describing what just happened on that play. It's the lifeblood of a fan for a fan of a certain age. And there, I still get geeked up about it. I still love it. I love it when it's done well. And you just get to enjoy it. Like the stuff that, and I'll tell you like the power of like Cubs radio. When the Cubs were winning the World Series, along with all the extra stuff that we did for pregame, Lynn Casper, who was the TV broadcaster, and you know he's talked publicly, he's been on my podcast, your podcast, talking about part of the reason that he still likes doing radio is because he didn't want to leave the team once they got into the postseason.
Yeah, man, I had Coombe on the PPP, and he told this story, like Lenny was around, and Coombe was supposed to do the fifth inning of play-by-play, and he and Len talked about it, and he's like, hey man, if you're part of our crew, what are we doing here? So you come in, and you do the fifth inning. And Len was so touched by that. They'd flown together all year long. They're seat partners. They were seat partners on the plane. So Coombe said, you do the play-by-play, man. Come on, don't have me do it. And so Len got to do an inning for every playoff game in 2016.
And beyond that, he was doing all sorts of pre- and post-game stuff.
Yes, he was.
Because he wanted to be connected to it. He wanted to be on that broadcast. And to go back to the idea of like the Cubs having the score, as far as credibility goes, when Lynn Casper is part of your pregame show.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
That's real strong stuff that's going on there.
So I was reading in the Sun-Times from Eldon Ham. This is from a couple years ago, but I was Googling and found it a little while ago about how William Wrigley in the 20s believed in the power of radio when a lot of teams and owners were afraid of it.
Mm.
And doesn't that make sense when you think about all the long history of pro sports and media and how that relationship is gone? Some owners around Major League Baseball were like, I don't know. No, it's going to keep people from coming to the ballpark. We can't do that. Can't have that. And William Wrigley's like, no, he was a promoter. You know, having made soap and sold soap and then eventually gum and everything. So
Speaks, that type of thinking was prevalent in Chicago until 2009.
Right? I mean, well, seriously, the Blackhawks and like not being on TV and the Blackhawks not even being on the radio. They used to have the first period show.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't even play the first period on the radio.
And for the exact same reasons.
Yeah.
Not on TV because we want people to come to the games.
So, and I love this particular aspect of radio history that they made programming and created things to be on the radio so they could sell radios. Physically.
Yeah.
And vice versa. In 1921, there were 20 operational radios in Chicago. There were 25,000 a year later. And in 1928, when Motorola made the first car radio, you know, all of a sudden they're like, oh, I think we might be on to something here. So I love that William Wrigley was looking forward and was comfortable putting him on the radio 100 years ago. The reason we're talking about this is that it's the 100th anniversary this year, and tonight is the radio night at Wrigley.
And they're giving away, we're giving away,
Bluetooth speakers.
Yeah. So like spinning radio forward all the way to, instead of you being at the cemetery with a transistor radio,
yeah,
you're there with a Bluetooth speaker to connect to your phone, where you might be listening to it on the Odyssey app with your Bluetooth speaker.
It's still the same sensation.
It is.
It's the same feeling, and it's even better mobility. I mean, I hang out on the MLB at Bat app a lot. You know, if I wasn't going to the game tonight, I'd be sitting on the balcony listening to the game.
Having a cigar?
Maybe. With it on the TV. Inside the house, just, you know, with, you know, no offense, Boog, but I'd probably be listening to the radio and have it timed out so in case I needed to turn around and watch a play, I could watch it. Because you can get the radio ahead of the TV.
Yeah, you
broadcast.
Can sync it up if you want.
You can sync it up perfectly, or you can let the radio be a little bit ahead of TV, which I like to do, so that way you can know whether you need to turn and watch a play or not.
I mean, we don't take it lightly that in some cases, we're the friend in your head when you're at work or you're driving or you're stuck in traffic or you're looking for what happened to southbound Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I guess I can't go that way. Now I'm going to have to turn around and go someplace else.
Uh-huh.
We understand that there is an intimacy, like you're talking to the radio sometimes.
Hey, don't watch TV in the car, folks, when you're driving.
No.
Don't do that.
I mean, the kids can in the back.
I know, but up front, you know, you don't want anybody to do that.
I could today, I'll tell you that. You're not moving on that Kennedy.
Yeah, Tanny. Yeah, that's...
That was... Sometimes you can, folks. That's the truth of it. If you don't recommend it for everyone, you got to be an experienced Kennedy commuter to do that.
Oh, man. We don't want to promote that. We haven't promoted that. Since I used to talk about how my wife used to do it. But Tanny, yeah, that was the darkest mood I've seen Chris Tannehill in a long time.
Yeah, because he was thinking that everyone was, and he's right to a certain extent. I was talking to the new DJ over at B96, and I was saying, are you staying in the city this weekend? And she's like, yeah, I'm not really doing much. And I go, well, that's perfect, because this is one of the great weekends to be in Chicago, because so many people leave. And so Tanny thinking that so many people were leaving,
yeah,
that maybe it'd be easier to commute.
Yeah, the thing is, they put a car race in the middle of the thing.
They sure did.
They put
How the hell?
They sure did.
It's even more interesting than that.
It's right here, too.
It is.
The NASCAR right people are literally in the building. I came into the garage because they've got like four or five cars here in the garage. And I was followed by one of the NASCAR courtesy cars.
And was Tyler Farengul also there trying to get audio for his new podcast that you're helping him launch?
I feel like if you're very interested in something, you should do something with it. So I want Tyler, because he knows NASCAR, to do a NASCAR
pod. It is 5:30 here on this Thursday, July 3rd, right before July 4th.
It is right before July 4th.
He's still a kid. We can work on some of that stuff.
But he was showcasing NASCAR knowledge this morning, though, too.
Oh yeah,
because he was talking about race car drivers and Mr. David, and you know, was sparring with him gently as the cool show is wont to do, or excuse me, the hockey show is wont to do. It was in between hockey segments this morning on their show.
I feel like you're killing one of Tanny's later
segments. Well, no, it's just an odd choice at 19 when we got Stoney coming up, and it's also on the dock set for 45.
I forgot it was on the dock.
Yeah.
It's just teasing good. It, right? Yeah.
We both have done a bad job with the dock today.
Yeah, and I would have allowed that had we not have a guest coming up here. So.
Well, it's a very important guest who used to broadcast Cubs games on the television and sometimes on the radio, and now does White Sox games on the television.
Yeah, we can ask him his thoughts, because obviously a Ford C. Frick Award winner like Steve Stone, you know, we can ask him his thoughts about all of these things and discuss with him about, wait, he hasn't won it yet? I thought he won it last year.
He hasn't. I didn't know what to do there. He hasn't won it.
He should have. He's long overdue for that award.
Ford nominated. C. Frick nominee. Multiple-time nominee,
that
Steve
is true.
Stone.
That is
true. I now have to retroactively take his award away.
You know what? You know what you should do?
Give him one of my Lissagors.
Steve, listen, I'm sorry about the Ford C. Frick mess up.
Here's a Lissagor.
Here's a Lissagor. I'll throw in my Pitch and Hit Club Award, which he probably already has.
Disgraced Ford C. Frick Award nominee.
Disgraced former Ford C. Frick Award nominee.
It's like me and the Emmy.
No, you should go get him one. You should see if you can buy one, you know?
I mean, you can. You can repurpose. Like, a lot of my trophies from when I was a kid, my mom, like, repurposed them, and now there are young kids who get trophies.
Sure.
And I like
I'm going on eBay right now. You think I'm going to find a Ford C. Frick Award?
Wait, don't we still have a Marconi that we can give him?
No, it was taken back.
Oh, that's right. Paulie
came. I feel like
Kane
he has other awards that we don't need to give him too many more awards.
That's a good point.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. That's your name, right?
Yeah, we are leaking confidence here in this segment.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
Well, not yet. Stoney's next here on the Score.
Please welcome accomplished pitcher and popular broadcaster, Steve Stone.
Yes.
Steve Stone.
Are you noticing that?
Well, I will tell you, Speaks, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
Chicago White Sox television analyst.
High drop throw and throw down.
No way.
He never tagged him.
He stopped short of the bag to avoid the tag. What a slide.
Ooh, put on the brakes. Chase, nice job.
What a slide.
Cy Young Award winner.
Hey, shout out to Coca-Cola. They put on the concert of the year last night. Flo Rida takes off his socks and signs them and gives it out to the crowd.
I think I would
stop at the shoot.
Because I'm thinking, right? It was out there all night.
Yeah.
It was hot. He was sweating. So when he takes off his sock and he signs it, it's not like you can wash that thing, right? He's got its autograph on. What do you do with it?
Well, you do a lot of things. Not taking it home would be one of them.
Hey, hey, I want to be a rock star.
Oh, I want to be a rock star.
Steve Stone with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love having the opportunity to talk with Steve Stone. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Stoney, thanks for joining us. In your career, you've talked about how you were 65-70% curveball. When you see what Clayton Kershaw has been able to do over his career with that curveball, now going over 3,000 strikeouts for a career, what do you think, as a curveball expert, makes his so special?
Well, I think when he threw harder, the curveball was actually better because it had tremendous break on it. I mean, you know, going back and looking at some of the archive footage of various pitchers, you could take a look at Sandy Koufax's curveball, and it looked like it was suspended on a string, and then all of a sudden the bottom just dropped out of it, and whoever was hitting had to hit it almost like a lumberjack. You're almost chopping at it straight down. And when Kershaw's was right, it was very similar to that because he got so much spin on it that the ball broke so late and it almost, you could hear it spinning. It looked like it was just hanging there and all of a sudden, boom, it just exploded straight down and nobody could hit it. So I think we're seeing, and there's a very good chance we're seeing the last of the 3,000 strikeout guys with Clayton Kershaw. I know Chris Sale has a chance, but he's got to stay healthy. There's a few other guys that have chances, but again, they have to stay healthy, Garrett Cole being one of them. He's had a hard time staying healthy of recent vintage. So when you realize just how long you have to go and how healthy you have to be, it's really a monumental accomplishment. And kudos to Clayton Kershaw because he's been one of the greats.
So Walter Johnson, you know, is the standard bearer for strikeouts. He gets his 3,000th in 1923. It's not until Bob Gibson, 51 years later, that a second pitcher gets there. And then while you're playing, Stoney, it's Gaylord Perry and it's Nolan Ryan and Seaver and Carlton and Fergie and Don Sutton and Phil Niekro. I mean, so like, but so that number, what did you make of strikeout numbers like that as you were pitching and doing what you were doing?
Well, there was a lot of different type of baseball around. These guys were throwing 300 innings a year. I mean, they were on, many of them were on four-man rotations. Later on, after the Mets went to five, there's a lot that went to five. But four-man rotation, you're getting a whole lot of innings per year and a whole lot of strikeouts. I mean, Nolan Ryan has 5,700-plus strikeouts. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things that you look at it and you go, yikes, what an amazing thing. And one of the reasons why he's been around that and the wins to get into the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. But yeah, we're seeing I think the end of a breed that for many years was able to dominate using just overwhelming stuff and striking out a whole lot of guys. And that was, you got to understand something, that was during a time when a lot of guys took pride in not striking out. And now nobody really cares because a lot of the analytics folks says an out is an out. There's no such thing as productive outs, they're only outs. But for me, productive outs are still important, and watching the guys go through what they're going through now and realizing that it's just a matter of not hanging around the game. It's not that the stuff isn't the same stuff it was before. I mean, the great stuff is just, it's always going to be great. You're going to look at Paul Skeen's stuff, and you can favorably link his stuff with some of the greatest in the game. All he's got to do is hang around for another 20 years and we'll see some numbers like that, but that's easier said than done.
Do you ever worry that there might be young pitchers who are maybe being pushed away from really developing a curveball because everyone's about velo, velo, velo?
Well, I think that's one of the things, Lawrence, but I think there's another factor, and that is that I personally believe there's a couple of pitches that are more devastating on your elbow than the curveball. One being the splitter. I think that's absolutely destructive. I mean, Roger Craig taught everybody on a San Francisco Giant team many years ago. He taught each and every one of them how to throw the splitter. And they were very effective for a very short period of time. And then his entire pitching staff dissolved with elbow issues. I think that the splitter is one of the more devastating. I think also with these guys trying to get depth on sliders, sliders that are now 92, 93 miles an hour. It used to be when that pitch was invented, it was called a nickel curve. You actually, now you would call it a cut fastball, but that's how the slider was initially developed. It was developed to move about 3 or 4, maybe 5 inches, take it off the sweet spot of the bat, and move straight across. And because you were cutting your fastball, it wasn't a whole lot of strain on your elbow. Then all of a sudden, everybody felt, you know what, we're throwing this slider here, so let's try to get some depth on it. Let's not only allow the curveball to give you depth, let's get the slider to give you depth. The only problem is that it's 92, 93 miles an hour. And now you're trying to get depth, which puts an incredible amount of torque on that elbow. And it's leading to record numbers of Tommy John surgery. So I think there's a lot more destructive pitches than the curveball, although people like to use the curveball as an example because of kids before their arms are developed, kids actually throwing curveballs and wind up getting hurt. But I'm not sure the curveball by itself is the culprit. I think the other things are, as well as the curveball and the velocity that everybody's throwing these days.
The splitter is making a bit of a comeback, Steve, because you're right. It was, I mean, it's widely thought to have hurt elbows. It was kind of a dark art to have it taught for a while. But it's making a comeback. Did you ever fiddle with one? Did you try?
Yes, I did. In fact, I was looking for a changeup, couldn't find one, and decided to split my fingers a bit because I knew it would slow down the ball if I did that, and it kind of morphed into a splitter. But I did throw so many curveballs. Even though I threw the splitter the second half of the 1979 season, I threw it exclusively at that period and was undefeated from the All-Star break on. But the splitter was doing some bad things to my elbow. And then when I discarded the splitter, went to a couple more speeds of curveball, things worked out pretty well. But yeah, to me, because I threw so many breaking balls, so many curveballs, the splitter was just too difficult on my arm in conjunction with that curveball.
I had so much fun watching Grant Taylor last night in the 8th inning. And I'm like, here we go. I'm going to bring him back out for the 9th. He had a 2-inning save last week as you were there on the weekend at Guaranteed Rate. And he went for it last night, and he lost it. What happened as you're watching? What do you think happened? He got 2 walks on 8 straight pitches. And then Will came out and took him out instead of letting him try to figure it out and finish it. It was an interesting 9th that I didn't expect to be watching unfold that way.
Well, I understand what they're trying to do with Taylor, and that's trying to figure out how he'd be best served. They used him as a starting pitcher in the minor leagues. I think he's the closest thing we have to a closer in this entire organization. I understand the philosophy of trying to get him 2-inning saves. Although I don't think you can recreate Goose Gossage. If you take a look at how many multi-inning, multi-out saves he had, it was unbelievable, and he was able to make the Hall of Fame. Again, arms like that don't come around too often, and he had a special one, as illustrated by the fact he spent so much time in the back end of a bullpen and still was able to get the numbers up to make the Hall of Fame. But I'm not sure at this point what the destiny is going to be for Taylor, but I prefer 1-inning saves, personally, if I'm trying to make a closer. I don't want necessarily to take a guy who's never closed before or closed very infrequently, let's say, and now all of a sudden you're asking him for multi-out saves in the major leagues. I understand trying to expose him to various other things. However, I think if in fact they want him to be a closer, teach him to do what closers do. And almost without exception, they don't go especially back-to-back multi-out saves, more than the 3 the 4 hitters you might face trying to get the 3 outs, but usually it's 1 inning or something like that.
Stoney, what's the argument for who should get the honor of representing the White Sox at the All-Star game?
Well, that's a real good question at this point. I mean, I thought Smith would have had it pretty much for sure, but then 3 outings that have been lackluster at this point. And I think what he's starting to realize is what a lot of guys do in their first year, especially as a starting pitcher. It's very difficult to pick up 30 to 32 starts in a major league season, especially when you're not used to it. And then you're taking a guy who has not been in a major league starting rotation. Suddenly he finds himself in one, and all of a sudden realizing, you know what? You can get a little tired by doing that, especially if you haven't done it before. And so they're seeing the result of maybe a little arm fatigue and doing the things and trying to do what they can to make sure that he's 100% when he goes out there. But he's had these three bad outings in a row. I don't know how that's going to affect it. So, yeah, it's a challenge to see who's going to get there. I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm wondering, you know, exactly who it's going to be, but who knows? Maybe at the end of the day, when you look at the numbers, maybe it's Meidroth. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a case for Miguel Vargas, but can you make a case for Adrian Hauser? Has he pitched enough? He's been great.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at the seven starts that I've seen, you realize that he's throwing as well as just about anybody in the game. And so, yeah, it's seven starts. It's not much. He probably is going to get another couple before the All-Star break, you would assume. So maybe that is enough. I mean, in lieu of having a better candidate, that might be the guy that you go to and choose him, because he's been pretty much lights out each and every one of those starts.
It's an interesting thing when you're trying to spin multiple plates in the middle of a rebuild. They need people to pitch and eat innings in August and September as well. But do you trade both Hauser and Savali? I mean, if you can get anything for either of them, because I don't know who comes up and pitches.
Well, I think you certainly trade one, and if I were to trade one, I would assume that Hauser has much more value than Savali at this point. I mean, Hauser has been terrific, and if you're thinking about acquiring a pitcher for the stretch run and the playoffs, I don't think you could make a case for Aaron Savali at this point. But I think you could for Adrian Hauser. I think when you look at that stuff and realize what he's done over the course of those seven starts, you realize that if he maintains that same stuff, you can take him, you can give him the ball in the second or third game of a playoff series and not feel bad about it, because he's had magnificent control to go along with overwhelming stuff at times. So, yeah, I would say that particular deal would have some legs on it, certainly would have some value. I'm sure that Chris Getz is dealing all kinds of phone calls, and certainly one of the names mentioned is Hauser, and it's probably mentioned very frequently.
Stoney, I've been stuck when it comes to Miguel Vargas, and Speaks has been on it. He's been talking about the offensive improvement of Vargas. For positional growth, I feel like it's more valuable for him to play third. What do you think? Like, what's the argument to keep playing him at first when there are usually more guys that can play first than can play third?
Yeah, I think if you were looking at just the entire future, you would say, well, put him at third base, leave him there, see what happens, because he's going to be a third baseman. But when you're looking for winning games now, and that's the difference between your front office and your general manager and your manager and his coaches. The manager and your coaches have to have a much shorter vision than the general manager and his front office, because they're thinking about winning not only this year, but they're thinking about winning next year and the year after, and how this team fits together and who's going to be where when everything shakes out. And I think you'd probably feel pretty good about Vargas starting at third base just about every day. But as far as winning now, you want to get the strongest aspect of your team in, and sometimes the strongest aspect is moving Miguel around to first base and then filling in with whoever, whether it's Rojas or anybody else, gives you another left-handed bat against a right-handed starter. So that's what the short version is. The long version is that you develop Miguel, and I'm sure that he is an accomplished enough third baseman to figure that that's going to be his spot down the road. But eventually, yeah, you might not want to move him back and forth. You might want to leave him in one spot. But that, again, is something that you're looking at down the road as opposed to today.
He was there getting his World Series game, World Series ring.
I think that's exciting, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But, you know, Lawrence was like, hey, I only played 30 games. How does it feel? They traded you away. And then they go out and they win it without you. But it's an odd feeling, I would assume, for a ball player. But he deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was a part of their organization, and they saw fit to bring him up for, you know, a little over a month as far as games are concerned. And so, you know, he deserves it. He's going to get it. He's going to keep it and pass it down to his family, I'm sure, one day. It's something to be proud of anytime you get one of those rings, and I'm sure he's very happy to have gotten it.
So we were talking about this the other day. Do broadcasters get World Series shares?
I would say, all things considered, no. However, it doesn't mean that the team can't vote them a certain amount, although they usually don't. You can understand that. There's the occasional guy that would get some of that. But I think, you know, look, if I had a choice of either the broadcasters or the traveling secretary, I would give it to Ed Casson because he's been around a long time and works awfully hard. He's one of the great traveling secs around. I'm not sure if he gets the automatic full share. I think the players have to vote on it. But that's the guy to give a full share to if you're looking to find another share.
That's gracious, like the guys who actually do the work to help make everything happen.
Imagine that. Yeah, you give it to the guys who do a great job and make it easier on you and your family over the course of a season. And, yeah, to me, those guys are the guys that deserve whatever share it is. However, that being said, I think the White Sox are at least a half a season away from cutting the pie.
I think you're right about that, at least. next week, we're going to start the celebrations of the 2005 team. What are you most looking forward to when it comes to going back over what happened 20 years ago?
Well, I was not here when that happened. I mean, I was watching it from afar. I was working a couple of national broadcasts at that point. But I obviously remember the team very well. I remember exactly how they did it. And I remember that was a really talented group of guys. And when you look back and you look at the players who made up that team, you'll realize there was some stars on that team. I mean, you know, that was no fluke. That team played wonderful baseball. And it was, you know, it was real exciting for the fans, quite obviously. So exciting that they'd like to see it again sometime soon, sometimes in, you know, in all of our lifetimes, let's say.
A very old school run, considering how much they leaned on the starting rotation of that team.
Yeah, I mean, starting rotation was just outstanding, as illustrated by the playoffs. You saw four straight complete games. You're not going to see that. But the rotation was very good. They had a couple of great years out of the bullpen. And when you're going to win, you know, you have the Cliff Polizzi of the world that come through and throw very well out of the pen, maybe the best year they ever had. You need guys to surprise you. You need some guys coming up from the minor leagues. You need some veterans recapturing some of the past glory. You need a lot of different teams, a lot of different surprises from your team to be able to win it all. And the Sox, if you look at exactly what happened that year and how it happened, you'll realize there were some surprises, not only the bullpen, but there was lots of other surprises coming around.
Steve Stone, this was great stuff, man. We appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Okay, guys, have a good rest of the show, and I'll talk to you down the road.
Yes, you will. That is Steve Stone. When we come back, we teased it earlier.
Yeah, I teased it brilliantly.
And now we're going to pay off that 40-minute tease.
I would say, all things considered, no.
Our guy, Baby T, had to flex some muscles on Mr. David, and I'm not sure Mr. David was ready for it. That's next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
See, we're in full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
It is 5:30 here on this Thursday, July 3rd, right before July 4th.
Ow! Kid was on it today, man. Reading a calendar like an MF-er. What happens when you get to produce a big time show like the hockey show?
You ever hear our friend Roy Wood's bit about this song?
No, about James Brown living in America?
The premise of the bit is that black people don't sing beautiful songs about America. And he said, look, people will always say to me, well, what about this one? And he's like, no. If you really listen to this song, he's telling you cool places for black people to be in America. Like New Orleans, Detroit today, Dallas, Pittsburgh, PA. It's like all the safe places for black people to go. And he's like, that song, you can't think about it being patriotic because Michael B. Jordan lost his daddy that day. After James Brown sung that song.
He looked good, though, in Rocky. Was it which Rocky is it?
Rocky IV.
Four.
Apollo did look great. Yeah. He just wasn't ready.
James looked great.
Oh, James was outstanding.
James was killing it. And at that point in his career, he's like, oh, look at James.
And Drago was killing Apollo. Too soon? All right. Tonight, the Cubs and the Score celebrate 100 years of Cubs on the radio when they take on the Guardians at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:30. First pitch at 7:05. Matt Spiegel's going to be there.
It's true.
I'll be listening on the Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
I'm going to bum rush the national anthem soundcheck until they let me and Kurt do the anthem. Just what's going to happen.
I would say maybe not this weekend.
So our friend Tyler Buterbaugh, Baby T.
No. Tyler Buterbaugh is Butterball. Baby T is Tyler Farringold.
So our friend Tyler Farringold.
Regardless, he is the Score's Eddie O, but of NASCAR. You know, Eddie O always has his, you know, his ponies picks, like, you know, on the morning show. But yeah, that's what Baby T was doing out here today, trying to win you a little bit of cash this weekend with NASCAR in Chicago.
I'm going to pass my question to Baby T over here, Mr. NASCAR.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I am also going with, not just because he was on the Raheem and Harris show yesterday, but I am picking Shane Van Gisbergen to win this race because in the four races that have been run in Chicago the last 2 years, he's run three of them, and he's won two of them. And the other time that he didn't win, he got wrecked out by someone's mistake in the rain. He's established himself, in my opinion, as the best driver in all of NASCAR on right and left turns on the road courses. There's something about this track that he just has a particular edge over the rest of the field, and he actually is racing in the Saturday race before the main race on Sunday. I'm picking a weekend sweep, so David, you and I are on the same page. Give me a Shane Van Gisbergen sweep in Chicago, and the new racing king of Chicago.
Tyler said that Vesbergen could be the new racing king of Chicago.
Well, I mean, if...
So now, David thinks he's got him. Mr. David says, I got this kid. I got Baby T, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, and he's like, Van Gisbergen.
Not going to work here anymore.
But Baby T's got a retort for you, Mr. David.
He's the old racing king.
Well...
Some guy, I mean, on 35th.
I guess
Street.
If we're going off the track in Joliet, maybe Jeff Gordon because he's won there three times.
Okay.
But
oh,
this matters more.
Bam.
Boom. Bang. You come at the king.
You best not miss.
Is that fun? Boom. Is that fun show, Mr. David, for you? Is that fun?
I don't know. That's pretty. That was fun enough to be the
fun
hockey
for
show.
Us.
This is why I want Tyler to do a NASCAR pod.
He absolutely should. He was rolling. I mean, when you know that a race car driver is good at both right and...
I think that's really good. I think that's really important. Well, like I'm a novice fan of NASCAR.
Right and left turns.
Yeah, but he's right because mostly they're left turns.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the thing. Usually NASCAR is just on a round track. It's a lot of left turns. You never really
Right at all.
You don't work out those right turn skills.
I guess if you're coming out of the pit, technically you're going right. But
just for a second.
That was Baby T's problem. He was an aspiring young driver, but just could not do those left turns. Oh, if it wasn't for that, though, he would have been elite.
Yeah. Yeah. He had the drinking problem, like an airplane.
Yeah, he did.
You're over Macho Grande?
And here's the thing. I'll never get over Macho Grande. Tyler's real last name is Van Gisbergen. Most people don't know.
So you can book that. Set aside your lakefront property now. Put your bets in on
Gisbergen.
Not going to work here anymore.
And then you can rent out Michael Jordan's Airbnb.
Yeah. So Stan Van Gundy is going to win this. Is going to win this race. That's what he's talking about, right? I think I caught that. Shane Van Gisbergen.
Van is his
fan. He's also known.
Candace Bergen?
Yeah. He's also known by the initials SVG. Why wouldn't you just go with SVG, Tyler?
Because that's Stan Van Gundy.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Either way, one for Feringhul, zero for Mr. David.
I like it a lot. This is...
I like it a lot.
I am not proud of my performance on today's show.
Real, you should be.
I thought it was fun.
This was a fun one.
It's going to eat at me all weekend long.
Don't. Lawrence, I'm glad you're saying it out loud. Can we rally around as a show?
Yeah, I don't even know what he's talking about.
No, there's nothing. Alex, help him out, man.
Yeah, say something wrong that Lawrence did today so we know what we're talking about.
No. There was a lot.
I can't point to a single thing.
I can. But there's... I'll give you some notes.
One thing.
Yeah, no, he teased something from yesterday's document.
Yep.
I know, but that's okay.
And then there was the Ford Frick thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
this is a bad show
for me.
No, but you continued. You kept going.
Yeah.
And you're live. You're...
I would say, all things considered, no.
Correct.
Whatever, Stoney.
You're correct about that. For Alex, for Tanny, for Speaks, for Tyler Buterbaugh, and Tyler Farrandall. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Thank you so much for the love and support that you show this show on a daily basis. I will do my best to be better on Monday so I can match everyone else on this show.
I have no guarantees for my own performance.
Stay out of trouble this weekend, please. If you're going to NASCAR, have a good time and let us know how it is. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy your family. Enjoy all the time. We'll hear you and talk to you on Monday, 2 o'clock, here on The Score. Teddy, hit it!
Ladies and gentlemen,
the weekend.